Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Solidarity Live. I'm Jocelyn. I'm super excited to be with you this morning as we have a very special show to discuss what the COVID vaccine means over the next couple months, how it's going to be distributed, and how to make sure that the capitalists don't ruin science and public health for everyone. Hi, Alex. Good morning.
Morning, Jocelyn. I think you basically laid out what we will be talking about. The truth is that we, the people, pay for the development of all of these drugs and especially the vaccines that were that are making news all over the place right now. They're calling them the company names vaccine. When they should be calling it the US taxpayers' vaccine or the international people's vaccine. And I think what I want to talk about today is that the creation of the vaccine with Operation Warp Speed, as they called it, is actually an amazing thing, but not in the way that they are telling it, because it looks like the pharmaceutical companies did anything. They didn't. What is amazing, and what this has shown, is what we can do with public resources when we put our minds to it, when we put our dollars behind it. We can create amazing things to deal with problems, even of the magnitude of this global pandemic. And so, joining us to educate us on all things vaccine and the fight to free the vaccine. Is Merith Basie, the Executive Director of Universities Allied for Essential Medicines, and also a lead on the campaign freethevaccine.org. Merith, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Good morning. Nice to see you all.
So first things first, I think the Welsh have denied the English the ability to come into Wales, I believe, because the English are not doing a good enough job at using their public health to shut down the pandemic. Is that I springing this question on you? You didn't know you were going to get it, but my understanding.
A variation on a theme, yes. In the UK, the English right now have a 4 week or into a 4 week shutdown, and Wales had an earlier shutdown, and so they are being encouraged to stay put and not cross the border or risk a fine. So that is actually happening, and normally the borders are not policed in the way that they are currently.
And what they're doing there, and hopefully across Europe with the resurgence, are these public health measures that we know work to arrest the pandemic. It's the only thing that we've got right now. But they're extremely effective if people did it. The problem is people don't do it. In America, we're especially stupid because it's been politicized. The rest of the world is dealing with sort of the normal public health problems, which is just it's hard. People get tired of it. People want things to be normal. People hope for the best, et cetera. The thing is, this is all we've got until we have a vaccine that can actually get us to herd immunity. Herd immunity without a vaccine is just actually shorthanded to mass death. With a vaccine, we can achieve herd immunity without mass death. But to achieve herd immunity, you need to immunize an enormous percentage of the people. So when we read the great news, fantastic science, and stories will be written about it, about how we, publicly developed these vaccines on a timeline that was really amazing. But what I don't think people fully understand is what comes next. When there's going to be these shortages that are going to blow people's minds, because the current system cannot deal with it. The only thing they know how to do is shortages. Remdesivir, a drug that was used, it doesn't even do anything. It literally doesn't do anything, but it maybe at one point might have done a tiny bit of a thing, but it doesn't do anything. And there was a shortage of that drug. It didn't help people, but because maybe as a last resort it could have, there was a shortage of it. when we have a vaccine which prevents people from getting COVID, the shortages are going to be mind-blowing to people. And I think I'd like you to just sort of talk about how what you're working on is literally the only solution to that. Like this, we know exactly what's going to happen. There'll be shortages. And there's only one solution, which is get these pharmaceutical corporations out of the picture. So with that, tell us a little bit about Free the Vaccines, the campaign, who's involved, and what your vision for it is.
Thanks, Alex. And you've summarized and touched on a lot of the key points that I think we need to break down. But I think to start with, Free the Vaccine, it's a global campaign. We have people in about 30 different countries organizing to push for a couple of goals, but the primary goal that safe, effective, proven and tested, whether it's tests, treatment and the eventual COVID-19 vaccine or vaccines are sustainably priced. So that means that governments, if they're paying for them, shouldn't be price gouged, right? That we it's not just like, oh, the system will pay. It's like ultimately we are paying, right? So it should be sustainably priced, available to all. And by all, that means regardless of immigration status, regardless of insurance status in somewhere like the US, right? And free at the point of delivery. And we say free at the point of delivery because technically it's not free because we already paid, right? So everyone's like, free. It's like, yeah, free, but you know, how many billions of dollars, not just in the US, but in countries all around the world, taxpayers are paying into a version of a vaccine or a treatment, as you mentioned, like Remdesivir. And then that one in particular has a $3,000 price tag for a drug that isn't really working when there's like a more effective, much cheaper, already available steroid on the market that we could use instead. And I do want to touch on the shortages piece. It was very exciting to see, these results supposedly come out, Pfizer, and then we saw Sputnik, and then we saw Moderna, interestingly, starting with like a 90% efficacy, and then 92% with Sputnik, and then 94.5%. It does seem a little bit like the space race, but we haven't actually all seen the data yet too, right? So, okay, so it's a nice press release, but historically, science doesn't get released through a nice press release that's gonna up those shareholder, the value of shareholder stocks and so on. So what we're doing is we're organizing folks to fight back and to recognize the problem and then to urge whether it's government, it could be pharmaceutical corporations or universities, and we're primarily focusing on this last part because no one else is, which is actually most of this research is being done, if not in collaboration with a university, with our taxpayer funds, but literally in university labs. And that we have an opportunity, given that it's taxpayer money, to leverage or influence the way that any new treatment or test or vaccine is patented and licensed to a pharmaceutical corporation. Why we still essentially own it before we give it away to these pharmaceutical giants. Why not urge these universities to commit to their sort of moral missions that they put on their websites and say, we are committing to saying that we're doing everything within our power to curb the pandemic as quickly as possible. And that means ensuring that the intellectual property on any new medicine linked to COVID will not serve as a barrier for others to be able to make a version of this drug, because we're going to need tons of it. Because this is a global pandemic, so we can't be selfish and have monopolies on these medicines. We need to be able to save lives.
Well, and Meredith, I think, thank you, first of all, for everything you're doing, because it's so important. And I think that it's a really interesting thing that when you read about the vaccine release, for me, the wrong part is emphasized, right? Like you see, oh, Pfizer has this vaccine, Moderna has this vaccine, and then like maybe you'll have the fact that the government paid billions of dollars into this research. But that's kind of the most interesting part to me. Mm-hmm. The government developed this vaccine, and it's like you're saying, free upon delivery doesn't mean free because we have already paid for this. Exactly. If you are a taxpayer, you have effectively already paid for the vaccine. And that's something that people I think are going to miss that fact. It's kind of an important one.
And the naming of is critical, you know, as I think Alex mentioned, you know, it's not the Moderna vaccine. It should be the taxpayer vaccine, mm-hmm. or it should be at least the NIH or the BARDA and Moderna vaccine. And we've seen this, like, not just in this pandemic. We saw this happen in Ebola. They talk about certain pharmaceutical vaccines. But again, they were all ultimately publicly funded to, you know, that degree. So I think that is a problem. There's other challenges with sort of the reporting around the vaccine in general, I think. Just saying, like, we need to say, look, this is encouraging. We all want a vaccine that is safe and effective, proven and tested, right? We need all of those things. But it's still early. And I think that, I don't know if it's just that they're trying to give people hope, but I think it's deceptive. And I think it's irresponsible to not be talking about these other key pieces. Yes, the public paid for it. But there's a lot of fear around taking the vaccine, and something that, you know, under Operation Warp Speed, you know, understandably, people don't want this to be rushed for political motivations. And that is going to feed or drive fear for a lot of people about taking this, unless we talk about and we see the data, we know it's safe, we know it's safe into the future. So I think those things need to be discussed too. And then there's the other issue with these different vaccines as well, about how they're going to be stored, right? So if we're going to end this pandemic, we need to look at this in a global way. We need global solidarity. This is not just about solidarity with the people in your city or the people in your country. We need to be thinking about everyone, and the fastest way to end the pandemic needs to be this global approach, which sadly we're not seeing, but it is critical. The vaccines that have been put out so far, at least what we've been seeing, is that they need sort of a super, super, super cold temperature. And in order to maintain a vaccine that cold, you need very specific freezers. Sounds obvious, but these things cost a lot of money. Also, there's the, you know, the cold chain, if you have to keep them cold, extra cold, it's like, I think it was like,
minus 94.5 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
The Pfizer one, I think, right? Okay.
Yeah, it's really cold.
You can say centigrade area. If you want, Meredith.
Sorry?
You can use centigrade if you want. It makes way more sense. It's negative 20 and negative 9.
It's really damn cold, okay? You don't want to go in there. And it costs a lot of money. And then if you're thinking like rural areas, right? Within the US, in a country like this, it's going to be problematic. There's already decisions having to be made about whether they spend money and in what way. And that's just the US. Think about a refugee camp. Think about, you know, more rural settings in hot countries. Like, what is this going to look like? And so, you know, groups like Doctors Without Borders, right, who are experts in being able to transport these medicines. But these are the sorts of questions when we're thinking beyond ourselves and just beyond our immediate concerns of our family and our friends and our community and maybe our country. These are the issues that are going to come out. And we're seeing things, the word vaccine nationalism, right? We're hearing the word nationalism far too much in general anyway, of course. But, you know, you see it play out again, and it becomes this issue of rich countries buying up, we've seen already, half of the vaccines that haven't even hit the market yet. Mm-hmm. That's Canada, Australia, US, UK, Europe, and Japan, just to start with. So I think when, I know there's like concerns within countries about taking it, but when you start to think like, actually, you know, what is this going to look like? This has been super fast, which we're excited about. in some ways. But let's see the data, let's make sure it's safe for everyone, and then let's make sure we're thinking about these issues of distribution justice now, because it will be too late otherwise.
So I think that people who don't have a public health background just wildly underestimate how difficult it is to achieve global herd immunity, to actually arrest and eliminate a pandemic. I mean, when we have done it before, it has been a global, in the midst of the Cold War, it was still a global effort to eradicate smallpox. The fight against polio has taken decades, because a bug doesn't care about borders, doesn't care about, but people really do. Governments do, supply chains do, logistics do. And it's actually hard to get people. I mean, just look at the hippies and the militia people in this country. We have resurgence of measles, mumps, rubella, right? It's hard to actually get people to take vaccines that have decades and decades of safety, right? We know for a fact how safe these things are. And it's still hard to get people to take them because you got some yoga mom on Facebook who's like, I watched a YouTube video that said this will turn you into Satan or whatever. It's probably the malicious side, you know. And you have to fight all of this stuff in the best environment, when you know, the president of the United States isn't just a giant POS. We're trying to not use vulgarity now so that we can get our show out on radio. We used to swear more freely. But whatever vulgarity Donald Trump is, he is. And he's just filling the channels with garbage. And that doesn't leave when he is tossed out on his ear. The garbage is going to be in those channels. So we're going to be facing a really difficult environment.
Also, I was going to just say on that point too, and also I think we need to acknowledge like the racism within the healthcare system too, right? And the discrimination and the historic sort of testing of BIPOC in general in the past in this country and in other places around the world, right? For testing the vaccines and other things. So I think like also acknowledging that there are many folks who have a legitimate reason to be afraid because of this history. And I think that's another group of people too, right? Who are going to be concerned. And I also keep hearing all these people send me stuff and it's like, is the government going to mandate a vaccine? Right. And what's that look like in different places around the world? So there's a lot of this now, and we haven't even produced a vaccine yet. Right. So it's going to, I think, reach fever pitch, I think.
Well, and I don't want to take us off on a tangent because you two are so brilliant. And I'm just like, whoa, lots of good information here. But I want to point out something that just keep, like, I feel like every media outlet that is even a little bit responsible should be pointing out every minute of every day. The people that have the most resources to protect themselves once they get COVID are also the least likely to be exposed to it. I mean, you have the professional class and the very wealthy people who are all working from home in quarantine. And then you have essential workers and communities of color, like you point out, Meredith, who are the ones getting this virus and dying at alarming rates. So you have this compounding, perfect, horrible, cruel storm where the people who are least equipped to deal with COVID once they have it are also the people who are probably going to get it. And that is the cruelty of this virus. You have people who say, oh, I don't know anyone with coronavirus. Well, congratulations, because in a lot of communities, it's wiping people out financially, health-wise, losing parents, grandparents. It's just, it's unacceptable.
And to, I mean, 250,000 people in this country have already died, right? And the U.S. is leading in the number of deaths from COVID. And there's a delay. You know, we're looking at these numbers going up, the cases, and we know there's about a 2-week delay before we're going to see those numbers hit in terms of death. And it's terrifying. And to your point, I think, Justin, is, yeah, there's a lot of privileged people who get to work from home you know, ourselves included, right? Who you know, may be concerned about this issue, but, you know, you're not necessarily impacted in the same way unless, you know, your community, you're out there in a community that is impacted, whether those are your friends and family members, you know, colleagues who are essential workers, but also, you know, our teachers, right, as well. Like, we've got all these other challenges too. So ultimately, everyone is going to be impacted, but as you said, disproportionately communities of color right now. And that's like 1 in 5 deaths in this country are our Black and brown friends, right? So something, I mean, I personally think that the response is criminally negligent, and, you know, it cannot be allowed to continue unchecked.
Atlas, he should be, right? I mean, this guy is literally, his name has to be mud forever. This guy is responsible because he's out there every day spreading horse, still trying to get on the radio. And that is killing people. And I will say that it's definitely, you know, like all public health, when you study public health, there's always this sad thing where every impact is always like, oh, well, poor people are going to face the brunt of it. Poor people of color are going to face the brunt of it, always. And, you know, like any pandemic. But America has sort of flipped the script a little bit, because everything predicted that we would not have 250,000 deaths here. And that North Dakota, 1 in 1,000 North Dakotans are dead from COVID. 1 out of every 1,000 North Dakotans now. And we're not even at, we're at the steep part of the curve, but we're not near the top.
Who am I interrupting?
Other countries that have implemented public health responses are doing far, far better than the United States. And we should find not just a modicum of modesty, I'm talking a heaping bowl of humility that we need to eat, because we are in no way a person who should be telling other countries what to do when 250,000 Americans are dead because our system was saying, oh, wearing a mask is not masculine, or whatever nonsense that idiot in the White House is pushing. So just on the vaccines, we're going to have to take the lead from other countries. Other countries who are right now talking about pooling resources, who are right now saying that they're not going to accept, you know, U.S. determination of, oh, these patent rights means you can't create this drug or vaccine for your people. I think that's the next fight. You have India and you have South Africa who have already said that they're just not going to follow, you know, they're like, we have our own laws and we have our own people and we're going to do what it takes to protect our own people. And the fight is going to be about American humility to admit that we have fumbled at every step of the way so far, except for using public dollars to develop a vaccine. That's literally the only thing that we got right. And so we need to actually listen globally if we want to actually bring this pandemic under control. Remembering, and I'll let anyone else talk, but I get on my stump here. It's just when you look at South Korea, which has 50 million people in it and has hundreds of deaths, hundreds total. This country has 250,000 dead because we just didn't do a thing correctly, again, except for public resources into the vaccine. So I want to like toss it to you, Meredith, in terms of the global effort and what that might look like, because that's where I find hope. Mm-hmm. The global effort is like yeah, obviously we're not going to just let a corporation tell us that we have to let our people die.
Yeah, let's not do that again. Just to wrap up some of your points, I think one of the things that it has, another thing that, you know, pushing back on the reporting, there are other countries who are much lower income or GDP, however you want to frame it, who have much better responses. But the press somehow is like, what's different about these people? It's like, there's nothing different. That's a totally racist thing to say. They just have a better response. And like West Africa had Ebola. They shut things down. Like Thailand, Senegal came out with like $1 tests like months ago. Why don't we have those? You know, like there is sort of like this fear of like, we couldn't possibly learn from those countries.
You're talking about the fact that reporters in America have, you Google this and look at it. They're like, what genetic difference
is explaining
that? And you're like, it's not the genetic difference. It's the fact that you can get tested and people wear masks and they're not idiots and go out to bars in the middle of a pandemic.
I will never understand this racist need for there to be like, is it the whites? Are they just more susceptible to whatever? Like, no. These are basic public health interventions that you learn about in a survey public health course in undergrad. This is not rocket science. And I think what's really unfortunate is that in America, our relationship with our own material destinies is so mixed up. We're so used to paying $3,000 for remdesivir or whatever the equivalent is that we don't even have the political confidence to be like, hey, if other countries are able to provide a $1 COVID test, what does that say about the country we're living in and how developed is it really? Are we really a first world country when we are leading in COVID cases and COVID deaths and in the fallout after the fact? Because let's not talk about the fact that a lot of the people surviving with COVID are coming out with lifelong medical complications, lifelong financial complications. This is a multifaceted tragedy for so many families.
Mm-hmm. And we were out there. We had a demonstration outside the Supreme Court. So shout out to like Spaces in Action and folks for leading that. But this was the concern. Like now we have, you know, 10 million folks who've had COVID. You know, is that a pre-existing condition if you're going to try to change the Affordable Care Act, right? Like this is a permanent lifelong problem. And the solution is not putting a category of people with a pre-existing condition that you're never going to cover ever again. We know that we need a universal healthcare system, not just for now, for the future, because guess what? This isn't going to be the only pandemic we see in our lifetimes. And that is why we need to learn from this one. And I think there was a couple of things you touched on earlier. You talked about Jonas Salk, who is the sort of discoverer of the polio vaccine. And I think it's interesting because he was actually at a university, just to sort of bring it back to the campaign. He was at Pittsburgh University when he discovered this, and he said that that this should belong to the world, right? Because it was publicly funded, and he saved thousands and thousands of lives. And in the campaign we have right now, we have these like Salk squads named after Jonas Salk, and people are organizing for this time of social distancing, right? Because that was what we were concerned about. Like everyone's shut up at home. You know, we launched in early April, just after the lockdown in the US, at least here in DC. And, you know, this thing is happening to people. You have no agency. You don't know when it's going to end. You may have lost your job. You may have lost your health insurance. You know, maybe you were the breadwinner for your family. There's so much anxiety and fear that we were like, we want to do something that is inspiring people to get together virtually, right? From all over the world. We had folks from South Korea, we had people in Australia, we had people in Brazil and Argentina, to fight back, basically, and say, okay, where is this research being done? It's been done primarily in these university labs, and we have this upstream opportunity, as I mentioned, to influence the drug pipeline system before it gets handed over to corporations. And because we've got a lot of creatives, but also people from all walks of life, people who don't know anything about access to medicines. This was really important to us. We want to grow this movement because in this country alone, 1 in 3 people pre-COVID could not afford to pay for their prescription drugs. 1 in 3. Okay, so what does that look like now? But this should be something that everybody feels that they have a voice, that they can get engaged with. You don't have to be an academic. You don't have to have a law degree. You don't have to be a doctor. It should be about every one of us and feeling that you can influence the institution, like in near your hometown or in your state or in your country, whatever it is, because most people, a lot of these universities, especially in the US, are receiving millions of dollars, if not billions, of public funds to do this work. We should have a say in it. And what has been amazing is we've come up with these creative ways to influence these institutions, because we all know we have like 85,000 emails. And you know, these days an email is probably not going to be the most effective way to get the attention of an administrator or the leader. It may be, and maybe you get lucky with that initially, but our teams have come up with these creative ways to engage. We had the Dolly Parton song.
Are you going to sing? Can we?
I'm not going to sing.
I should have had this queued up. This is like my favorite thing. I stepped on it though, so say it again.
One of the things that the teams who wanted to influence Vanderbilt University, which has been in the news the last 2 days, because a famous, you know, country singer, worldwide icon, Dolly Parton.
Yeah, I was going to say country singer doesn't cut it with Dolly Parton.
Yeah, Dolly Parton, everyone in the, I feel like.
Worldwide phenomenon, right? Force of nature.
Yeah.
Amusement park owner.
Dolly World, cultural icon, gave $1 million to the University of Vanderbilt for this very same reason. This is what we're talking about, much like what happened at Pittsburgh back in the day for polio. We realized this many months ago, and we were like, what should we do? And some folks in one of the SALT squad for that area thought, okay, let's change the words to the song. And then we got musicians, some from, you know, from Tennessee.
To what song?
To Jolene, Dolly Parton's Jolene song, and it's changed to Vaccine. And people have been making memes about this since, but like this song went sort of viral, at least for us. We had like 300,000 views back in, I think, July. And we have a lip sync, and we should get all of you, to be honest, to do a lip sync for our next version. And absolutely. If anybody wants to, you can.
But I just had an idea here, and we'll tell everybody where to go. And I'm going to ask you to do like one more shout out to it in a clip so that we can push that around. But I think that we should start a movement to remove the Moderna.
Yes.
From the name of the vaccine, and let's just call it the Dolly Parton vaccine.
I'm fine with that. Dolly.
Dolly Parton vaccine.
Yeah.
It's way better than saying that Moderna, you know, we had Zane on from Public Citizen, and when he did the report where they did these Freedom of Information, the FOIAs, and they demanded that Moderna, the company, actually disclose how much public funding went into it and how much private funding. And they had to amend their paperwork to be like, actually it's zero.
Yeah.
We put $0 into it. How do you get it to be called yours when Dolly Parton put $1 million into it?
It's
like, as taxpayers, we put more in, but I'm fine playing second fiddle to Dolly Parton. That'd be the coolest that I'd ever be in my life if I actually could play second fiddle. So the Dolly Parton vaccine makes way more sense because this is – because she also, unless it turns out she doesn't want to make it free for the people, but I believe she does. What Jonas Salk did is he made a choice. And there's a lot of people who are going to have to make choices right now, And the choice he made was, do you want to be wealthy beyond imagination right now? You could buy a golden yacht and a golden car. You could eat the fancy dinners or whatever it is. That's what you could do because you created this thing. Or you could save thousands of lives and end a disease and be known forever, forever as Jonas Salk, the man who gave away the patents because you can't patent the sun. Because his belief that his being part of something bigger than himself, knowing that in science, you never go 0 to 60 in science. You're always building on research that came before, and you're doing it for the benefit of the public good. Right now, we've just got things so perverted in this country in terms of like what matters, the keeping up with the Kardashians sort of mentality that scarcity is good because it allows some people to profit enormously while the rest of the world burns. And we have some choices to make. If we want to ever live again in a way where we can see live music, where we can, not worry about killing grandma and grandpa by having Thanksgiving, we need to follow Jonas Salk down that path and recognize that the private good, the private profits are never going to be aligned with the public good, that these vaccines need to be given to the public. So I'm going to throw out my spicy question to you, Marith.
I know, right? Was this all
I'm going to embrace myself.
Well, because we agree on basically everything. We work together quite closely on our fight to dismantle the pharmaceutical industry. But I have found that some people don't agree with me on this next one because you brought up vaccine nationalism, and I am absolutely against vaccine nationalism because bugs don't care about borders. But I actually do want to nationalize the vaccine industry. I actually want to take the entire vaccine industry into public ownership, remove private companies completely from the situation. And by nationalizing the vaccine industry, I want to internationalize the vaccine. There's trade-offs, right? Like the government, this dude in the White House has shown, is not always going to be on the side of the people. But what I can guarantee is that the corporations are never on the side of the people. Mm-hmm. And so when you have something, when you take it into public ownership, we have at least some small d democracy that can drive the development of vaccines and the distribution of them. I do not think that it is at all possible for the market to actually do vaccines. The same way that the private industry markets can't do fire stations.
We have a good example of that from back in the 1800s. If you ever watched The Gangs of New York, you know, when the two opposing fire crews come in and then they end up fighting each other instead of the fire. That's kind of what's happening.
What's happening now?
It's a good metaphor for the R&D system in some ways. But I agree. I think the word, nationalize the vaccine industry. Yes, I'm all in. And because currently we're sort of almost doing that, right? Like we're doing that essentially, but we've socialized the risk and we've privatized the profit. And it needs to be, that second part needs to not happen. And also, again, to sort of talk about the work with Universities Allied for Essential Medicine, like this is a key piece. Like pre-1980, universities couldn't profit from their innovations, especially medical innovations, right? And so I think we do need to sort of take a look at it systemically. And it wouldn't require, I agree with you, I don't think it would require that much of a shift, to be honest, based on the way that we do things. It's just shifting that last part. To go back to the sort of Dolly Parton vaccine, Vanderbilt still needs to step up, like all universities in this country. I am deeply concerned and disappointed at their behavior during this pandemic. 250,000 people have died, and they are not stepping up to give over their intellectual property, which is for the most part public. And they need to sign something called the Open COVID Pledge, or they can give their money, sort of technology, data, all of the information and intellectual property to something called CTAP, which is recognized. Both of these things are recognized by the World Health Organization, but the details are not what matters. You know, in this conversation, what matters is that we need to make sure that universities, as these sort of institutions, need to be leading in the way that they share information, that it's open science, that they hand over their intellectual property in a way that makes sure that we are going to curb the pandemic as quickly as possible. We cannot go through what happened with HIV and AIDS. Right. We cannot do that. And I think, to your point, like, having it in the public domain, much of it is in the public domain. NIH needs to step up and, you know, go one step higher up the chain and just say any grant that we give to any university or publicly funded institution needs to ensure that the sort of products down the line will be accessible and affordable to everyone. Done. It could be done in one foul swoop. It is yet to be done. And, you know, nationalizing the vaccine generally, and other essential medicines in my world, is the way forward, I think.
Well, sorry, I'm just listening, okay? Because everything, we could do this all day, and I'm down if you are. So, yes, I think that at the end of the day, it really shocks me that everyone isn't framing this in the way that you are, Meredith. This isn't really like a vaccine that popped out of nowhere. So I propose we just start calling it the people's vaccine instead of the Moderna/Pfizer vaccine, because I'm sick of seeing it. Like, it's perpetually like this, whether it's CNN and New York Times or whatever. It's like the Pfizer vaccine. And then maybe you'll talk about a little bit about how they got billions of dollars or worked with the NIH. That shouldn't be the footnote. That should be the lead.
And People's Vaccine, I love that you mentioned that, because there is this initiative of which we are part of called the People's Vaccine.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Look at you.
So I wasn't trying to plagiarize your work.
No, it's perfect. And we're it's not plagiarism. It, yeah. We're sharing. Sharing, yeah. Is good.
It's
sharing
open, is good. Open data. Open,
yeah.
Science.
Awesome. Yeah. If you go to peoplesvaccine.org, you can see that basically there was a letter that came out in May led by Oxfam and UNAIDS, and it had 140 signatories, like former world leaders, right, from all over, you know, the planet, saying that they believe, much like Jonas Salk, that this should be a public good. And people should check that out. We're in that alliance too.
So are we. We believe very strong. Social Security works. We believe very strongly in that is an open vaccine.
Yes, for everyone.
And I didn't even phase you, Meredith, with the nationalized vaccine. You're like, yeah, no, they're essential medicines, which is great. That's why we get along.
Let's go further.
I want to see, I'm actually okay with if someone steals the vaccine too. So maybe that's where some people might draw the line. Like, when I see the stories like the Chinese stole the data or the Russians stole the data, I'm like, what a dumb system we have where somebody has to steal the data. Why don't we just give everyone the data, all of the data, no science by press releases, because all the data should be shared with everybody. Because how do you know that you've got the smartest people working on it? A lot of the inventions that are life-changing, life-altering, come from odd avenues. So all the data should be shared so that we can all look through it and, you know, not have the bottom line of a corporation driving things. Because look at the Boeing 737, right? They like look at the failures of corporations to keep people safe when money is in question.
Well, and I think it's really important to note that pharmaceutical companies, like insurance companies, don't actually do anything. So you have the scientists and the researchers who are developing all these things. You have the government, which is subsidizing and distributing. What is the pharmaceutical company doing? I mean, making money. And obviously, I think there are a lot of brilliant people that work at these companies. That's, you know, lots of great, they hire lots of great scientists. But when you really break it down, we need to be honest about the fact that when you're talking about healthcare specifically, you have a lot of people who are just in this game making money that is, and look, if they were just making money and it didn't have any impact on the rest of the country, I wouldn't care. I mean, more yachts for everyone, enjoy. But the reality is that these people and their need to make billions and millions in profit is what is preventing the rest of us from having life with dignity. And I think that's a really bad thing.
And I mean, I think ultimately too, you know, coronavirus is going to stick around. Like, even if there's going to be a market, right? You're not going to start losing money if that is your game, right? Even if you're offering it at a sort of at cost, right? And people will say, well, the Pfizer vaccine was mostly privately funded, but you know, the data shows also they got the biotech it was working with, called BioNTech, got 375 million euros from the German government. They got tax breaks. Like, there's all these other things that go into it. So it's not as sort of black and white as people would have you believe.
And although it is black and white as people, yeah, as we would have people believe.
Oh, yes, for us.
It's literally never the corporation. They never take risk. So the so-called Pfizer vaccine also had a guaranteed market.
Exactly. Right?
I mean, they said that's just publicly funding it from the other side.
Further up the stream, right? So you sort of don't see it. It's more smoke and mirrors, I should say. But I think what we've seen is, like, we are all connected. Like, you know, someone in, you know, Appalachia to Wuhan, China, right? And so we need this global collaboration. We need this global solidarity. And I think otherwise, you know, the sort of like neo-colonialist approach of like the rich countries first, that what we're calling vaccine sovereignty as well, you might have seen that in the press, that needs to be turned on its head. And I think we also need to learn, because I think there's other challenges like climate change, right? That global solidarity, once again, it's like we need to learn these lessons as a planet, I think, in order for us to move forward. But I will say, on a sort of more hopeful note, I would encourage as well, if people are excited to, they want to play a role in this campaign with Free the Vaccine. There's also, you can check out freethevaccine.com/exhibit, and you can see a lot of the creative work that's coming out from all over the world, right? From Ghana, as I said, to Canada, to obviously the US, Europe, South Africa. And we're inviting people to also submit to this online exhibit, which actually universities and actually some museums are now taking on as a physical exhibit and some just as a way to educate people on this issue. And we've been working with folks who sort of led during the HIV movement, sort of ACT UP in particular, some folks from there who have been thinking about how we frame this messaging so that people begin to understand what is at stake here. And obviously there's the, you know, creative sing-along versions as well that I'm gonna hound you both for your video rendition of Vaccine. I don't know if you saw the lyrics, but it was vaccine, vaccine, vaccine. Please don't charge me just because you can. Right? They go on like this, but it's
We're working to download it so that we can play it on the way out of the show.
Oh, okay. You can, it's on the site. You can, there's a song that you can play from there for sure. But I think people need hope right now. I think they need facts, but they need hope. And being able to play a role in influencing these institutions to do the right thing, I think is critical. And somebody asked us the other day, well, you know, if these vaccines are already out, does it matter if you're influencing a university? And my response is 100% yes, it does, because you can change a license after it's on the market. All the wins that we've had historically at UAM have often been when there's been an HIV drug that's already available, but it's priced too high. And by changing a license, you can impact so that generics can enter the market, right? And that's what we're looking for. We need more, you know, brains. We need more companies to be able to produce the eventual vaccine or vaccines so that the world will be, there's going to be enough people that need this, that everybody should be able to play a role in responding. And I think there's a lot of work to be done. There is some light at the very end of a long tunnel. There's a long way to, before we get there. But I think, we'd love to see more people, everyday people, just playing a role in understanding this and taking action.
So Meredith, on your way out, I want to give you, you just basically did your wrap up, but I want you to give people a really one clear thing that you'd ask everyone to do to be part of this movement, to free the vaccine, to ensure that these greedy corporations and their Wall Street paymasters don't make unlimited money by creating scarcity around this thing that we paid for. Because that's how they profit. They make money by making sure that not everyone can get this. And the battle that we're in right now is that we're going to be a global Salk squads. Jonas Salk is the North Star that we have to follow, whose name will be remembered far after the golden yachts of these greedy assholes are mildewing wherever they go. I'm getting a head shake from the producer over the vulgarity. I think that one passes. It was not expletive. It was exclamative. No, whatever it was.
Very descriptive.
Yeah. Anderson Cooper, it played. You can look at the precedent that he set. But Merith Basie from Universities Allied for Essential Medicines, campaign lead or leading on the campaign to free the vaccines. Give us a quick talk to everybody. This is what you should do to get involved to free the vaccines.
So step one, you can go to freethevaccine.org. Step two, you can sign. There's an individual pledge for your local university. You can share it. You don't have to be at the university. You can sign it for all universities if you like. But we're going to use that as a tactic to say, like, 2,000 people in your area have already said that you need to give up your IP to be a leader in curbing the pandemic. And if you're interested, anyone, anywhere, we have people from about, I think the youngest we've had is 14. The most senior is 72 years old. It doesn't matter your background. It doesn't matter your education level. Just an interest. We have a season 3 cohort, which is going to start in February. And we would love for you to think about joining us. If you happen to be somebody who has less time but more money, we're always that's always welcome too. You can donate. But follow us via the page. And we are going to be sharing actions. You can sign up for a weekly newsletter, and there's always an action that you can do. And there's a lot of hopeful, creative stories. If one last thing, too, is if you are creative or artistic and you have links to somewhere that might be interested in sharing this exhibit, we'd love to hear from you, too. And if you just have ideas, like, this is about the people, too. This is like the people's free the vaccine for the people, by the people. So we'd love to hear from you. But thanks for giving us space to chat about what we've been up to.
And
thank you so much for being here.
As you're heading out, Jocelyn, I'm going to spring this on you, but Meredith, you can hear this, that I've got Brad. He's loaded it, so we're ready to play it. And then at the end of the show, in the last 2 minutes, I think Brad's going to play it. But if we can figure it out, that we'll just lip sync to it live on the show.
Oh, man, I didn't come ready. Brad says don't do that.
Oh, man.
If you go to Free the Vaccine tonight, you can pull up the lyrics. If you do /dog, you can find the video and the lyrics.
All right, we'll just play the video on the way out. But next time, Jocelyn, you and I are going to have to
We're going to be TikTok stars, Alex. That's all I've ever wanted.
That's what we'll do. Us and Dogface 420. That guy's my hero. Meredith, thank you so much for joining us on Solidarity Live. Look forward to continuing the fight to ensure that this vaccine is available to everybody and continue the legacy of Jonas Salk and not these greedy assholes from Wall Street. Jocelyn?
Yes.
What do you think about...
Oh my goodness. So, okay, a couple things I almost brought up, but I think it's important that Meredith touched on climate change because it's really essential. I know we're all a little overwhelmed with COVID right now, so that's kind of in our near vision, but that if we do not solve this problem of a warming planet, public health disasters like this one are going to become more common. So I think if we have the mentality that this isn't a one-time thing, this is something that from a public health perspective, we need to get these structures in place now because there's going to be another version of COVID-19, regardless of how that looks there. But it's when you talk about climate devastation, there's an element where we don't even know what the next coronavirus is going to be. We don't know what the next novel pandemic is going to be. And we need to have a system which is equipped to handle that and equipped to protect people in a way which is not class or race-based. Because otherwise, I mean, we as a species, the outlook just isn't great. I mean, am I wrong about this, Alex?
You're not wrong at all. If you want to sort of give yourself, we have to give ourselves 2 minutes for the video. That was me. Brad, give us a little sign of when I have to stop talking. If you want to give yourself some nightmares or disinform yourself, you can go to the Journal of Emerging Infectious Diseases, EID, COVID is not in any way special. It's actually like sort of middle of the pack in terms of devastating pathogens for a pandemic. And the only thing that everyone agrees on is that they will be increasing because of the destruction. And it's there's a bunch of things, but encroachment on by humans into ecosystems. I'm being told I have to.
All right. Well,
we can play it. But
soon.
The key is that you're right. Climate change is guaranteeing that we will see more pandemics. This is not, you know, it's the 100-year storm. And now it's the every 2 years. That's what we're going to see with pandemics, and we need to be prepared for that. Vaccines and nationalizing the vaccine industry is part of that. So on that note, I think we should go out on the Dolly Parton vaccine here so that folks can hear this wonderful song.
Vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you people, take a stand. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Please don't charge me just because you can. Your promise is beyond compare, but what price can the public bear? We're out of work and trapped in quarantine. We fear we will be left to die if the price is set too high. How dearly we have paid for you, vaccine. Let's put to use these public funds and set that virus on the run. You know the one I mean, COVID-19. We're desperate now to get you here, but that's no cause to profiteer. You belong to all the world, my dear vaccine. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you people, take